Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to wrap up Comic-Con 2025 with some of our thoughts on some of the big news there. We're going to talk about the Naked Gun, and man, parody might be back, as well as we're going to discuss if the Fantastic Four first steps might have saved the MCU. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, Troy Heinrichs.
What's up, everybody?
And I almost said Christopher Nolan. Not him. He's not here.
I wish I had his money.
It's his better looking brother.
Wouldn't that have been cool as hell? No, but Kyle Nolan from NoReruns.net. Thank you, Kyle. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Kyle, if you've listened in the past, he goes to San Diego Comic-Con every year, so he's our man on the street, if you will, and he's going to have some information about all the stuff going on there. So I got to ask you, first off, how was it this year? Because it was noticeably light on comic book movies this year.
Well, yeah, typically I concentrate on the TV stuff, so that didn't really affect me as much, but I did notice that there were a lot less, like people seem to have an easy time getting into Hall H for a lot of the days. Cause I heard people said they just showed up and got in. There wasn't like, I'm sure there were people lining up overnight, but, people were still able to get in there when they wanted to see stuff.
Cause of the big reveals that for people that don't know, Hall H is where all the massive reveals are. And if you don't have Marvel or DC, there's many less big reveals to have, right?
Yes. Yeah. Even the last day when they had George Lucas, I was able to line up 30 minutes before the panel and get into that. So it still wasn't like super packed.
Okay, cool. So you were there for that one.
I was there for that one.
Excellent. Because we're going to talk about that. You have to. All right. Well, what we're going to do is we each have a panel of our own. We basically have panels there at San Diego Comic-Con. So we each have a few things that we're going to go over. Kyle was there. So if he can illuminate some of the things we're talking about, fine. Mostly we're each going to talk about a few things and then kind of discuss why we like that news or why that news is interesting to us, and then we can just discuss it as a group if it warrants it. Some of it might not be, who knows, but we're gonna go round robin basically just one at a time. But Troy, why don't you kick us off with like the first thing from San Diego Comic-Con? Oh, and if you don't know what San Diego Comic-Con is, I don't know what to tell you. We talk about this every year. It is basically the biggest festival of its kind. It started out as a comic convention and quickly morphed into genre entertainment, really like very heavily influenced by movies and television. And Marvel and DC in the last 15 years or so has been very prominent there and anything comic book movie related. And as you know, as comic book movies have kind of withered out a little bit, they're thinning the herd, culling the herd, if you will. You will notice that the studios haven't gone there and impacted it as much this year. Though last year, I think, didn't Deadpool and Wolverine play there first last year?
Yes. They had a showing there and they had a massive Marvel panel.
Yeah. So you had James Gunn that showed up for Peacemaker, but it wasn't like a massive DC panel. It was just for Peacemaker, which was surprising. So, all right, Troy, so why don't you kick us off? What was the first thing that really caught your fancy?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that I noticed wasn't even entertainment related whatsoever. It was all side to entertainment and the things that are all coming up as the year finishes up. And that was the Lego display. Lego was actually at Comic-Con this year, and they built an entire recreation of the convention hall and the street outside, about 200,000 elements and 8,000 minifigures. To make this display, which you can actually see still at their virtual booth. There's a link that we'll hopefully put in the notes, so you can actually see the Lego booth. It was pretty impressive. 1,500 hours to build this model of San Diego Comic-Con's outside, since nobody ever sees it outside because they're in the building all day. But they also announced a whole bunch of sets that are related to the stuff that's coming out the back half of this year. They had a Stranger Things brickhead set that's coming. So you're going to get Mike, Dustin, Lucas, and Will all in one blockhead set.
Will Will be upside down?
That's a really great question. You could set him upside down, I suppose, on your shelf if you want.
I think you have to. You have to. Like, he has to be like upside down from the other guys. I think that's required.
For sure. Wicked, obviously, For Good coming in November. So there's multiple Wicked sets that are going to be coming. They also announced a Nintendo Game Boy. So if you have the Nintendo NES system, which I have, the Game Boy one will definitely be a purchase coming my way. And then the 3,000 piece plus set for DC's Arkham Asylum is also dropping. So they got some big news. Lego was a big winner at Comic-Con this year.
So 200,000 pieces, is that what it was, you said?
That's what it says.
Wow.
Yeah, I missed that one in person. I heard about it after the fact. Usually I stop by the Lego booth. For some reason, I didn't stop by their booth this year at all on the convention floor.
That's a lot of nerd sweat that went into putting that baby together.
I mean, I put together like a 3,000 piece set. It took me 15 hours. This is 1,500 hours to build this thing.
Did someone just walk in and just Kool-Aid man that shit?
Oh yeah.
I'm sure it was glued into sections.
That's exactly what I would have done. Would have been that guy. Well, that's pretty impressive. I mean, you know, yeah, it's not entertainment related, but it is. I mean, it really is. I mean, you've got Stranger Things, DC Arkham Asylum. I mean, that's obviously a factor.
And Wicked. Don't forget Wicked.
And Wicked. Forget. Do you think it's gonna is the same appeal there for Wicked For Good? You think? Like, do you want a Wicked set? I mean, I know you want a set to be Wicked, but do you want it to be about Wicked?
I'm a person that's usually only looking for things that are in the, you know, $250 to $400 range. I'm not looking for like the $50 sets. So if there's a
if there's a
$300 like shiz set or something, then yeah, maybe I would buy that.
When I saw Wicked, the first Wicked in the theater, they gave us like a flower set that we could put together. It was probably like 50 pieces, but. So Lego, we were already getting Lego Wicked stuff at that time.
I'd already be tired by that. I can't imagine 200,000 pieces. I just can't imagine. I mean, it's impressive. Now, do you get like directions for every piece or do you have to figure it out? Is it like a puzzle? I don't do Lego. So Troy, I'm asking you.
I'm sorry. Say it again.
Is it like, do you get directions? Is it paint by numbers, so to speak, you know, in terms of Legos, or is it actually they give you the pieces and you're like, you figure out how it goes together?
Oh, no. There's definitely instructions. And the fun thing about it is that certain sets don't have any custom pieces in it. So you could actually download the instructions from the Lego website and buy the pieces individually, and you may actually be cheaper than buying the box set itself.
Interesting.
Some of the older sets, not some of the specific sets like Bumblebee or Optimus Prime or whatever.
All right, that's one. So, Kyle, what do you got? What's your first most interesting piece of news from?
So, my first thing is that It Welcome to Derry, which is a prequel to the two It films that we recently had in the theater. They're coming back with a prequel series to follow the life of Pennywise during his 27-year cycles. So, the first season will concentrate on... I think it was, what is it?
The 60s, 68, something around there?
Yes.
1962. Yep. And then future seasons would be 1935 and 1908, and they're going to work backwards through his timeline. So they had what they did was they had this short 30-minute panel scheduled, and fortunately I arrived there early because I know how this works. You can't arrive for the panel you want to see. You have to arrive one or two panels beforehand, usually, to get in. Mm-hmm. And was completely full, the room. So it opened up, they showed us the opening 10 minutes of the series, which was, it started off creepy, it looked very cinematic, and then things just went bonkers and people were laughing hysterically at, like, because
in
it was
a good way, like a thumbs up?
A good way. Yes, in a very good way. But then
it was creepy and then it got hysterical. I mean, I can take that either way right there. Like
no, the effects are really well done. Okay. And it just like, it looked like it was going one way and it just became very unexpected in what happened. And then Andy and Barbara Muschietti took the stage. They just stood up the whole time. It was like a 15-minute discussion, but they came out. He was like, why is everyone laughing? This isn't supposed to be funny. So he was like just deadpanning it because he knew he was enjoying the reactions completely because it's exactly what he wanted. And so they gave a nice discussion about the show. They talked about how it's going to work with these different 27-year cycles for each of the each of the seasons. They talked about working with Bill Skarsgård again and how creepy he looks once he's all in makeup. And they just really enjoyed this ability to tell it in a long form, this story in a long form format. And they even more so than they did with the movies. And they are just really excited for people to see this play out.
Because my understanding is that it's not just Pennywise himself. There's actually more happening in Derry that we don't know about. And there's like other evil creatures or something that's going to be happening from the take that I heard.
Well, if the opening 10 minutes are any indication, then yes, that will be, we will be seeing other weird creatures.
That's interesting. I know like first season is they're going to focus on the Black Spot Fire, which is like a real life thing where it was a nightclub that went up in flames or something. The Bradley Gang Massacre in 35, and then an explosion in the Kitchener Ironworks. So they're trying like these different events in lore to really focus on. But Pennywise is definitely a factor, because if you watch the trailer, I mean, Pennywise shows up. I don't know if he's in that 10 minutes, but he's there.
No, he wasn't in the part that we saw.
Yeah, he's coming, though. He's there. Because it's really about the origin of Pennywise, right? Like the whole series is kind of going backwards to get to his original origins.
When he shows up the first time.
Right.
Yeah, and so this takes place at each of those 27 years when some big event was happening. It was just hinted at in the books, but they get to explore.
When's the turtles show up? That's what I want to know. Space turtle.
Ever-present. Ever-present.
I got a question because you went to the panel. Did Buscetti, Andy Buscetti, is it Buscetti or Buscetti? Whatever it is. Bruschetta. Whatever his name is. When he's the original director from the first two movies, which the first movie I thought was phenomenal. Second movie got leaned a little too much into special effects, I thought, instead of like just kind of had the same issue that the last Hobbit movie had, where they had way more effects than characters, development and whatnot. Because they had the right cast and everything else. Did he talk anything about any aspect? I'm sorry, I just got back from a long, long trip, so I'm a little all over the place today, and I apologize for that. Did he talk anything about the fact that the chapter two of it had a lukewarm reception and how they adjusted anything in that?
They didn't really talk about the movies at all. Okay. They only had 15 minutes to talk, and they concentrated solely on
they need to get on the ball
on the series.
Okay, good. But you're excited about it. What you saw was exciting.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Okay. And then they showed a teaser, a short teaser afterwards, which they released online, a new teaser. I think it was like 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's on our Facebook page. You can find it there. So, okay. Welcome to Derry. That comes out in October, I believe.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Well, my first thing to mention is George Lucas showed up. Now, if you don't know, like, he hasn't made it to San Diego Comic-Con, I don't think ever, which...
Yeah, they said this was his first appearance ever at Comic-Con.
That's crazy to think about.
Which seems ridiculous.
Yeah, yes. Because I've been, it's been a few years since I've been, but I remember the first time I went, it felt like I was at the Empire in certain parts of the convention. Because if you don't realize, like, people dress up there, like, it's really about being a fan and just kind of living that fan lifestyle. And a lot of people wear costumes. They cosplay the hell out of this thing. They've been planning the new costume for the whole year. And there's a lot of Star Wars love. At least there was the years that I went. I assume it's still there. Well, probably this year more than usual. So he showed up actually because he was talking about the Lucas Museum, right?
Yes, he has a new museum that I forget what it's called, but a new museum that he's setting up in Los Angeles to showcase 40,000 pieces of art that he's collected over the decades.
Yeah, it's called Lucas Museum. That's what it's called. And like the idea is to kind of get his art out to the masses and make sure that people are able to access it. And I guess he had a panel with Guillermo del Toro, Doug Chiang, and Queen Latifah. And when he came out, now you were there, so I understand he got like a standing ovation. It was a full on the masters in the house. Was that the?
Oh yeah. Everyone reception? Stood up as soon as he stepped out on that stage. Everyone stood up and was cheering. It was like the guy we've all been waiting for
our 60 whole lives. I've been showing up in this stormtrooper costume for 30 years, just trying to see this guy. Finally, he showed up. That's funny. So was there anything that he, did it feel like he went into a lot of his own history, or was it really just focused on that? No, that's what I had wished.
Yeah. It was solely about, here's the different type of art that I've collected that we're going to be showing at this museum.
That's disappointing, isn't it? That sounds disappointing.
Oh, it was so disappointing. I even, it's embarrassing, but I even almost nodded off and fell on the person next to me because I was just, this is not what I wanted to see. This is why it didn't make my list.
Oh, that's so disappointing.
I really wish he had delved into his projects and things like that rather than solely about, oh, I collected this piece, this artwork from this person, and this is going to be at the museum. You can see it. Then they also talked about like the building design of the museum, but it was solely about the museum and the art that's there, nothing about like Star Wars or his other.
I mean, you go there and you're literally among the Troy, you've been to C2E2 in Chicago. It's like that times 100. I mean, it's insane. And these guys, most of the people going there have been going there for years, and they're so amped up for whatever they're a fan of. I mean, you can go anything from Supernatural, you know, something like that. When that was out, that was huge there, like all the way to Star Wars or Marvel or DC. It's all over the place. It's just genre. Movies and TV are like the biggest things there. And George Lucas is like one of the reasons why this kind of life even exists. Like that Star Wars fandom really kind of propelled geek culture to the next level as a fan. And to see him go there and not talk about the things that he's famous for, not talk about Indiana Jones, not talk about Star Wars, not get into all that. Don't go then. Stay home.
Yeah.
George, you know,
that's threw up a barcode. They're like trying to raise money, I think, for the museum and things like that. So it was solely about the museum. There was even someone in the front row who was cosplaying as a lightsaber. You can see them in like the photos, a giant blue lightsaber.
Like just walking around glowing.
Out. Yes, it was glowing.
Great. Because we needed a glowing dildo walking around. That's fun.
I'm just surprised the museum is going to be in LA because he lives in Chicago.
Well, that's where movie and TV culture mainly is going to be. It's going to be in LA because that's where people go for Hollywood. You know, they go to Chicago for pizza, Troy. They're not going to Chicago for Hollywood.
Maybe I want to eat pizza while I look at the art.
You know what?
You can bring your own. I'm sure you can find some Chicago pizza in LA.
No, no,
no,
no, no. You take that back. You take that back. All right. Go ahead, Troy. What do you got? What's next?
It was more of an announcement than an actual panel, but it did happen in San Diego at Comic-Con. But Walking Dead's Daryl Dixon show will end after season 4. Both Norman Reedus and Melissa McBride were in Comic-Con dropping the news. So 2026, the characters will end with the 4th season. It's amazing that these two characters have been part of The Walking Dead for 15 seasons of television, Carol minus one. The first 2 years of the show took place in France, the season 3 and season 4. They're actually moving to Spain for the last 2 seasons of the show. The third season is going to drop on September 7th, and then season 4 will be in 2026. So according to Reedus, it's going to wrap up beautifully. So we'll find out.
I liked the first season. I never got around to watching the second season, but
I can tell you that in the 4th season, the way it's going to end is that the two of them are actually going to finally bang and have a kid, which will make the new spinoff. So.
That's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. They're going to find a way to get back to America. That's what's going to be. Now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, that's what people are hoping, is that at some point, like how these spinoff shows between Dead City and then The Ones Who Live and then the Daryl Dixon show, like if they don't all reunite at the end of all of this somehow, It kind of is like, what was the point of it? You know?
Money.
Yeah, I think money.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's the answer. Money. For sure.
I mean, in universe, what was the point of it?
And will this actually be the end of it? Because, I mean, they could just go off the Book of Carol. They can just do that and then they just bring them back together that way. I can't imagine that's the end of those characters. I just can't.
They're saying it'll end perfectly.
They said the show will end. I don't know about them.
Yeah.
They'll meet back up with Rick.
Well, if that show ever comes back, I love another season of the Ones Who Live. That was a great show.
I think it is coming back, isn't it?
I hope so. I haven't seen
anything about a second season for that
one. Well, I don't want to make stuff up, but I'm sure it'll be back. Okay, so Walking Dead, Daryl is finally going to shave and get a bath, I hope, in season 4. let's get that happening. And I saw Dead City's coming back with a new showrunner because the second season I heard was not well received.
not as
I never even finished. I quit halfway through. It was so boring.
That's what I keep hearing. It was so boring. Absolutely. So, and I don't know how you make a boring show with those two characters. I don't, because they're both very good at what they do for those respective characters.
I've not finished season one completely, but I mean, eventually if they're not fighting anymore, then it would be boring. They have to be fighting in order to be interesting.
Well, it seemed like they were trying to make him redeemable. I'm like, just let him be a jackass. That's who he is. It's fine.
He was redeemable back in season 10 and 11.
Was he, though? Really? Was he?
I thought so.
All right, Kyle, you're up. What do you got?
So Paramount Plus had released a new trailer at Comic-Con for the show NCIS Tony and Ziva.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a follow-up to the Mothership show, which picks up several years after not me, because I haven't seen it. Others last saw these two characters, and Tony discovered that he had a daughter and that Ziva hadn't died. And so this picks up where they're no longer working for NCIS. Tony has a private security company and Ziva is setting up this language school, and they find themselves in this situation where these folks have stolen a lot of money from the government and framed them as the ones who stole it. And now they're on the run trying to prove their innocence. And so it takes place, I think they're in Paris, but it's shot in Budapest. So it has a very unique look compared to the original series. Mm. But it's also a very serialized 10 episodes. It's one story. So those who are used to the Case of the Week, this is not that. And it's also going to be airing on Paramount Plus. So people will have to get a subscription if they want to watch it.
They're not happy about that either, man.
But the good news is they take advantage of not being on broadcast by throwing in F-bombs and S-bombs just because we can. But as someone who hasn't ever watched an episode of the original series, I watched the pilot of this because I did the press room.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed the show. I plan on watching the rest of this series. Apparently, it takes a big turn about four episodes in. And so I'm interested to see what that means.
Because you didn't watch NCIS, you said, so did you know the characters or their backstory or anything?
They do a good job on the first episode of going through the whole history of these two characters. And so they show like, this was 2009, this was 2016.
Okay.
So they give you a nice rundown. If you weren't familiar with these characters, what they, their history and how they ended up where they are.
Okay. I'm willing to check it out, but I will say, like, I've posted a couple of trailers and bits of news over the last few months of that show. And usually like it blows up because they've got a lot of fans. Like there's a lot of fans for that show and those characters, and they are all pissed off that it's going to be behind a paywall. Like they are pissed off because they watched it on CBS and this should be on CBS and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, they're trying to get you to go to their service or whoever service it is currently, Skydance's, whoever's.
Yeah.
And
Skydance Plus Plus.
Yeah. Skydance Plus Plus. Because of the merger and whatnot. But the fans are huge, man. They are ravenous for the characters. I did not know that these characters were this popular. I had no idea.
I saw people wearing like Tiva shirts or Tiva hats because they gave them out at their panel. So people were wearing those all over the con all weekend.
That's funny. Okay. Well, I'm kind of excited for that. I saw the trailer too. I'm looking forward to it, and I know it's coming. Is it September?
Yeah, I think it's September.
Yeah, so it's coming soon. And I like that it's 10 episodes. I'll watch it. I'm not gonna watch NCIS, so I will watch something like that where it's 10 episodes, especially if there's F-bombs.
You're not gonna catch up on 22 seasons.
No, I figure I don't have like 2 years just to sit in front of my television and pull a Grey's Anatomy like Troy does. I just don't have a desire for that. No. But I am looking forward to Peacemaker 2 because they did drop a trailer there and they kind of explain that John Cena is going to fight this alternate version of himself. And they definitely speak to the whole idea that there's another multiverse and supposedly this is going to be a way to incorporate canon. And James Gunn, once again, like he kind of tried to illuminate the world on what is canon and what isn't, because if you don't know or you don't remember, in Peacemaker season one, like he meets the original Justice League actors, which is why this alternate universe is very important, right? So they can try to say, well, this is why that was there, but, you know, here's what's canon now. And every time I hear from James Gunn about this, it gets more complicated. It gets more ridiculous. So I just don't want to hear about it anymore. I just don't care. Like, just make something that's very good and entertaining, and I'll figure it out. That's where I'm at with it. Does that bother you guys? Like, how canon is kind of like, this is canon, but this isn't, but it also was in the same damn show, so why isn't it canon? Like, it doesn't make any sense and whatnot.
To me, it doesn't bother me as much because it's been so long since that first season. I don't really even remember.
That's fair.
What happened. So I'm fine with whatever happens in the second season. Doesn't bother me.
It does directly tie into Superman, though, because Frank Grillo is in the Peacemaker as Rick Flagg Sr. And he's going to be after Peacemaker, I believe, because he killed his son, which happened in the previous iteration before it became the new DCU. So I don't know what the rules are, but they make no sense. And you just gotta roll with it. And I did hear him call Frank Grillo an asshole, which I found fascinating because there's like a back and forth with them that they got along. And James Gunn notoriously has this no assholes on set rule. He doesn't allow it. But he said, I made an exception for Frank Grillo. And then so there's like a great back and forth that you can find on YouTube if you find the actual panel. And where Frank Grillo said something along the lines of, you know, when we asked him like what his favorite episodes of the seasons were, and or someone else asked, and James Gunn named only the ones that he directed, and Grillo just threw it back and said, yeah, and I'm the asshole. So I thought that was a good back and forth. All right, Troy, back to you. You got more Legos?
Not more Legos, but more light-up things.
What?
Like light cycles, light boats, all kinds of light things, because Tron...
I don't know how I feel about this one. Go ahead.
Tron Ares is coming, and I'm excited. To say the least, because I don't like the fact that we don't have the story of the ISOs coming out of the second movie. Maybe they show up at some point, because we still don't have a lot of info on the movie itself. Even in the panel that was shown, it was basically just a laser show rock party with Nine Inch Nails music playing the entire time, because the score is actually done by Nine Inch Nails. They actually played the music video for the song from the movie as part of the panel itself, because they only had like two extended clips from the film. One was showcasing the light cycles in the real world, and then the light boats in order for them to escape the grid to get into the real world. But Jared Leto was there. Jared Leto's character is a digital soldier that's brought out of the grid into the real world by Julian Dillinger. Yes, that's the bad guy from the first movie, the Dillinger name. So is there a tie in there to the first movie? We'll have to wait and see. And yes, Jeff Bridges is back as Flynn one more time. We don't know how yet or for what purpose or what version.
But Sam Flynn's not in it, right? Like Garrett Hedlund. Okay.
Yeah. Have not seen that name pop up in the cast at all. But Kevin Smith was one that actually moderated this panel. So a lot of good nerding out. Jared Leto said that he's an executive producer on the movie. At one point, he was like standing with Bridges like on the set, and he had to yell cut on himself during the filming because... he just couldn't believe he was standing next to Jeff Bridges, because apparently Jared Leto is a huge Tron fan. So if anybody's like going to treat Tron well, it's going to be a Tron fan. So I'm actually excited to hear that Jared Leto was as big of a Tron fan as some of us Tron people are.
I did hear Jeff Bridges say that he tries to stay out of Jared Leto's way because he's very method. And man, here's my thing. I like Tron Legacy. The original Tron was interesting for its time. I mean, I don't think it holds up. It looks ridiculous if you want to watch now, but it's
an old 4K remaster is not bad.
It is. So it looks ridiculous. It looks like people in their pajamas running around with glow sticks all over their asses. Jared Leto is bad for anything good. He's bad for genre films. Every time he shows up in something, it just feels like it ruins it. I don't know what it is. I think it's his I want to be Jesus energy, but man, it just kind of, and when he shows up in the trailer, I just got disappointed. I was kind of into the aesthetic. It had as a very Blade Runner 2049 kind of vibe. But it loses me as soon as he shows up. I'm hoping I'm wrong. It would be nice to be surprised, and he actually did a very, you know, energizing performance, but I don't know.
But at least they're doing something different, right? Because most of it's going to take place in the real world versus inside of the grid, which is where we were kind of leading at the end of Legacy when ISO was able to escape the grid and come into the real world. So I'm excited for that, because if we can do stuff in the real world instead of being back in the digital, I think that's a cool twist.
And it's probably too hard for Jared Leto to do method that he was in The Grid. So that would have posed a challenge for
him. He probably did wear pajamas with light glow sticks, like duct tape to them, to really get into it.
Just made his body shape into a shape of a one and a zero, just so he could digitize himself.
If he could. I mean, it comes out October 10th, one and zero, speaking of. Yeah. I don't know if that was intentional, but I like it.
I think it's a great marketing ploy. You should lean into it.
I dig it. All right, Kyle, what do you got?
So my next thing was that Stars is finally, after 12 years, we're getting another Spartacus series. I didn't realize how much I missed the original until I saw the trailer and saw this world again. So this one is set, it's a sequel to the last series with Nick Tarabay reprising his role as the infamous Asher. Because this one's called Spartacus House of Asher. But you might be saying to yourself, didn't that character die in the original series? And yes, but they're doing a what if, where they're saying, what if Asher hadn't died on Mount Vesuvius at the end of Spartacus' Vengeance? And what if he had been gifted the gladiator school once owned by Badiatis in return for aiding the Romans in killing Spartacus and putting an end to the slave rebellion? So this is a sequel, but they kind of like retconned. But it looks like the same type of exciting action. And I won a autograph signing with the cast. And so when I was going down the line, I was asking them about their characters and about the show. And several of them told me that this is going to be even bloodier and have more sex and nudity than the original series, which I didn't think was even possible. This was like Cinemax level show that in those first seasons.
Cinemax.
So I'm curious to see how they make this bloodier and even more sex and nudity in this thing. But I really enjoyed the original show, so I'm looking forward to seeing how they do this, like retconning where they bring him back and just living in this world again for another season.
I gotta tell you, and I've got a special, just a recent attachment, just because I just got back from a vacation I've been planning for a long time to Italy. So I got to go to Rome, and went, saw Mount Vesuvius, saw Pompeii, the Colosseum, and all of that, and just all that Roman architecture. And it's, the history there is phenomenal. Like, I mean, I really didn't dive into the history most of my life. And then I got there and then bam, I'm just going through it. And because you're living it, right? You walk through the Colosseum and you see like how the architecture was built. There are no freaking sharks in the Colosseum. That would have worked. I verified this with tour guides, by the way. I'm like, no sharks, right? There's no way sharks get, and they're like, how would sharks get in here? The ocean is over there. And I'm like, that's Ridley Scott. I'm just trying to understand. But you get a lot of the history when you're there, and they kind of go through it. And it's really, really fascinating to know how much of that you've seen in movies is true and how much was ridiculous. And I like that show blurs the line appropriately, because it really feels like movies and TV shows have leaned more into mythology than really the history these days. So I say, go buck wild. If you're going to bring that show back, just go buck wild. But it is pretty cool. I recommend anybody go see the Colosseum if you ever get the chance, because that history is phenomenal. And by the way, I learned that the Catholic Church stole most of the marble from the Colosseum. That's what you find in St. Peter's Basilica. Or Basilica? Basilica? However you say it.
Basilica.
Thank you. Jeez, I have a hard time with it. I'm not Catholic.
The important thing is, were you entertained?
I did it while I was in there. I did it when I walked in. As soon as I walked into the center of the Colosseum, I did the spin and held my arm. I'm like, are you not entertained? No one thought it was funny. No one. Nobody. And the tour guide said, everyone does that. I'm like, they should. They should. Okay, I'll have to check that out. Now, I didn't watch the original show, but since it's a what if scenario, I don't really have to then, right? This is going to be another one of like Tony and Ziva, where it's just pick up and go.
I would assume so. I mean, it's going to follow that same character, but it's like a new situation. So I think his past is still his past, but he survived and was granted this Ludus to run. So I think it'll sort of still be its own series. I doubt you need to have seen the other seasons.
Okay. All right. Well, I do want to mention this. So Coyote versus Acme, this came up at Comic-Con. It was announced by Will Forte. There was a panel for it. Now, if you don't know, this movie was saved by Ketchup Entertainment, right? And originally it was going to be completely scrapped by Warner Brothers. They were just going to make another write-off. I think they got way too much bad press over losing Batgirl. And so now it's actually getting a theatrical release next year on August 28th. And they've officially announced it at Comic-Con. Showed some footage there. And what that is about, if you don't know what it's about, is Wile E. Coyote is suing Acme because he's just sick of never catching the Roadrunners, basically what it is. And it's kind of a Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It's got that mix of animation and live action, and Will Forte's in it. I'm not a big fan of Will Forte, but I am curious about this movie. And this is one that's pretty awesome because fans kind of willed this into existence. This was not going to ever see the light of day. Outrage kind of online sparked this to happen, and now we're actually getting a full theatrical release of it. Granted, it's coming around Labor Day weekend, which is historically one of the weakest weekends to launch a movie, but at least it's getting out there, and I think that's a win.
I'm curious, like, who is the target audience for this movie at the end of the day? Because, like, you have to, like, grow up with Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner and all of those cartoons, and how many times you buy something from Acme, whether it's, like, the rockets or a balloon or punching bag or whatever it is that he's trying to take out the Roadrunner with. So, like, would a teenage audience today understand the point of this movie? I don't know.
Well, if this story's done well. Sorry,
Kyle. I mean, they probably saw it on HBO Max until they pulled all that stuff from HBO Max. But all those cartoons were available there for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It's true. That is true. I think it's one of those shows that parents and share with their kids. I just don't know how they share it with them anymore because, you know, it's hard to get to come across it.
VHS, I guess.
VHS. Damn, son. Yeah. Let me break out the VCR, kids. We're going to watch some old cartoons. That's funny. I think we're back to you, Troy.
Yeah. I mean, talking about 20 years ago, it's been 20 years since the Avatar, not the blue people. The real Avatar, graced our screens over at Nickelodeon. And with this, we had a 20-year reunion panel that happened at San Diego Comic-Con. Original cast members were there. Katara, the lady that plays Katara's voice, was not present, but she sent in a video, which is really nice. But they actually did table reads of some of the favorite episodes in the character voices. So that was a lot of fun for the fans. But I think the big thing they were really excited about was we got to see the first drawings of Avatar Seven Havens, which is the next Avatar in the series after Korra. So in this one, a young earthbender discovers that she's the new Avatar after Korra's time ends. But in this era, the Avatar is not the savior of the world. In fact, the world and the spirits both hate the Avatar. And we're thinking that that's something that has to do with whatever Korra does at the end of her reign specifically. Because if you remember in the last season of Korra, there was more mechanical, more technical things versus like the regular environment that they grew up in. So as the world went to more technology, there might have been some kind of cataclysm event that happens. And we're thinking that maybe that's technology related because Avatar Seven Havens is supposed to have less technology. So we're thinking technology did something to ruin the planet. And that's why we have a new challenge for the new Avatar to step forward, who apparently has a twin also. So there'll be an interesting story there for Seven Havens, which will be coming out, we believe, in 2027, because it's supposed to come after the new Avatar Aang movie, where we're actually going to see our original characters as adults before the events of Korra. That's coming out in a movie next year.
Animated? That's still animated?
That's an animated one, correct.
Because
so none of this has to do with season two of the live-action remake. This is all the original cast, original creators working on this new movie for next year. And then the Avatar Seven Havens TV show, which will be two seasons, 13 episodes each season of that new property when it comes later on this decade.
And the live action series is filming seasons 2 and 3, which are like the end. Like they're only doing 3 seasons, but they're filming that back to back, if I remember right. So that's more Avatar.
It makes sense to do so just because the way the story goes. Mm-hmm. Plus, you got everybody together, and then you can just drop them when you need to drop them from the release schedule perspective. But yeah, the original Avatar was 3 books, so yeah, 3 seasons of the live action as well makes sense.
And I think didn't they? Because I know the new Avatar Fire and Ash. This is a different Avatar. The Fire and Ash trailer, I think that released at Comic-Con too, didn't it?
It might have.
I think so, yeah.
I saw it in the movie theater in front of Fantastic Four, so.
Looks, can we just admit, it's basically just Pixar at this point? I mean, it's really just a CGI animated movie. That's what it is.
Well, it's like calling the Lion King and Mufasa, those as live action, but they're really, it's all animated.
All CGI.
Where is the live action? One dude walked across the screen. Oh, well, you know, it's live action, man. Interesting. Lots of Avatar news. All right. So, Troy or Kyle.
Which is a completely different Avatar.
Absolutely.
So my next thing is also an animated thing. So the folks behind Rick and Morty announced that Adult Swim has picked up a President Curtis spinoff. So that's President Curtis's character played by Keith David on the show. Usually there's some big disaster maybe caused by Rick and one of his inventions, or maybe solved by Rick and one of his inventions. And the president usually has to get involved because it's some world shattering event. So mm-hmm. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with this spinoff series without Rick. And it's just the president, if they're going to make it some kind of political parody or if it's going to still be him saving the world over and over again. But I've always enjoyed this character on Rick and Morty. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they spin him off to his own show.
You really can't go wrong with Keith David.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You just can't. Now, I don't know how they're going to do that either. Honestly, I don't know how. But you know, you're talking about animation. The South Park creators were there too at Comic-Con, right after they released the premiere of their 27th season, which went for it, I guess, is one way to put it.
Swung for the fences,
but they famously, if you didn't know, they locked in a $1.5 billion deal with Paramount, and it'll hold even with the new company, right before they released the season. And then they released it and they just went wild attacking Paramount. Like, it was a big part of it. Yes, they attacked the president too, but they were really going after Paramount and Skydance, that whole merger. That was crazy. And then when they did their panel, the first thing they said was, we're terribly sorry. And I think that with sarcasm in their voice. Were you there for that, Kyle, or did you hear about this panel at all?
I heard about the panel. I'm not really a South Park watcher. Mm-hmm. They did have like a activation offsite, which I had gotten a ticket to that. So I went to that and I think I maybe spent 10 minutes there. They had just announced that giant $1.5 billion deal. Mm-hmm. And so they had food and stuff at this activation. No prices listed. So I'm figuring, oh, maybe it's free. Maybe it's cheap. $15 for a hot dog. I was like, you guys just got a $1.5 billion and you're charging like stadium prices for food. And then as soon as like some acapella, they had like some trivia. I obviously don't watch the show, so I didn't know the answers. And then once some acapella group took the stage and started this expletive filled song, I'm like, this is not for me. And I just left and walked back. Yeah. So I've never really been a fan. I remember like I watched that short way back when it was first released, the Spirit of Christmas thing, mm-hmm. but I could never really
get Mr. Hanky, into the Christmas poo.
Yeah. I could never get into the show after that.
Yeah. That'll ruin it for you. I get it. Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo. It's sad that I still know kind of the song. I don't watch it really. I watched that episode because it got so much talk about it. And it was, I know it was the highest rated South Park episode, the premiere, 27th season premiere, highest rated episode since 1999. But it's still a very relevant show. They're not giving $1.5 billion for no reason, right? People still watch the hell out of the show. It's still very relevant. A lot of fans. Okay. So I'm going to segue to something else I want to talk about. And that's Predator Badlands. And it comes out on November 7th. Director Dan Trachtenberg was there with stars Demetrius Schuster, Kolomontanji, and Ella Fanning. They were in Hall H to promote this movie. And it, if you don't know, it's like a Predator is now the focal point. Like, there's basically, Elle Fanning has a Weyland-Yutani. She's an android. So I'm assuming that's how they have a connection. Like, the Predator won't kill an android, I assume. But the Predator is actually the lead. And I think that's really fascinating. I think it's really fascinating. And it's also kind of a crossover with Alien, because Weyland-Yutani is from the Alien franchise. I like that they're doing that. That was interesting. And also, Trachtenberg mentioned at the panel that he had breakfast with Schwarzenegger and is looking to cook stuff up for that guy, quote unquote, indicating that Dutch could return at some point. Because if you watch Killer of Killers on Hulu, there's a hint that that's possible. Now, I don't know how I feel about that, because honestly, I feel like the last Prey was an awesome Predator movie. This looks fantastic. I don't know if I need Dutch. I don't. Like, I feel like the character has a perfect movie. I think Predator is one of the few perfect action movies. Like, there's nothing wrong with that movie whatsoever. Just let it live. And let's keep trying new stuff like they've been doing the last couple of movies. What do you guys, do you have an opinion on this?
Is this like an android alien buddy movie?
Yeah, it's like another it's like 48 hours with androids and predators.
Yeah, I mean, the trailer I saw was the Predator is actually the one being hunted.
Yeah,
and then the android is actually giving him tips, or it tips, on how to survive.
Very much so. It's pretty cool. I think that's a cool idea. I mean, to do it from the Predator's perspective, you're not going to get any conversation except from the android, but you're going to get some fun action. The design looks awesome. I mean, it's really, really looks like your standard action hero, honestly, from the 80s. So the Predator works, I think. It's just a cool idea. And I'd rather keep doing that than more to bring Dutch back and have some tired, you know, he's 78 years old at this point. I think today's his birthday. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger is 78 years old. What's he going to do
to a Predator?
He's going to get to the chopper.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to get to the chopper. He's going to be back. He's going to have hip problems. I mean, are they going to have like a, you know, he's laying there in the mud because he can't get up. That's not fun. I don't want to watch that.
They can bring in his son to take over the role, like, I mean, Dutch Jr.
Yeah, he's a solid actor. I'd watch him for sure.
I mean, I'm just excited for Dan, because I remember watching Dan when he was on, I guess, video podcasting before video podcasting was a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he actually had like a Revision 3, I think was the network back in the day. So to see him go from like doing what we're doing right now and to have these like successful movies and successful shows and like just so cool for his journey.
It is pretty cool. I mean, he did podcasting years ago, years before ago. It was really a thing. I think even before us, you know, we started in 2011. I think he did it before us. So
yeah, to do a 10 Cloverfield Lane and be a success with that one. And then, you know, drop Prey, and Prey was so good. And,
absolutely. That's very cool. All right. Back to you, Troy. Last round.
Last one, I think, is probably the most talked about, I think, from the weekend, potentially, than the fact that no DC or Marvel was around. But Project Hail Mary, they showed the first 5 minutes of the film. This is with Ryan Gosling. He's a science teacher, and the world is going to end. And so they hire him to basically be an unwilling participant in an experiment to go into a rocket ship and go find a new place to live. Apparently, all the stars in the galaxy are blinking out of existence, except for one. And so he has to go find this particular star and find a new planet to go land on, except that he's by himself until he finds his friend, Rocky. And if you actually know, this is a book that's actually written by Andy Weir. Yes, that same Andy Weir that did The Martian.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a Martian fan, definitely pick up the book, because this won't be out until 2026. So you have plenty of time to read the book, Project Hail Mary. But the fans were really excited to see how Rocky was going to turn out. They're fans of the book, and they actually did really, really good. They actually made a giant puppet. Lucasfilm helped out making an actual real-life puppet of Rocky, who doesn't have a face, right? He's just a rock with five arms and then like three fingers coming off of those arms. And the clips that we saw of Rocky actually were really great. So if Build-A-Bear's listening, you know, you might want to make a Rocky stuffy next year because people are going to want it because Rocky's cute.
Even though he's just the new Wilson?
Yeah, kind of, in a way.
I know my brother listened to this book and he loved it. I just haven't got around to listening to it. Maybe I should listen to it before 2026, then I got time.
I mean, you can just watch the movie. Comes up March 20th. And this is directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller. They know how to make funny. They also do the Spider-Verse movies. They did 21 Jump Street, I think. And it stars Ryan Gosling. You talked about that. And it's written by Drew Goddard, who, you know, I love Drew Goddard. So he did Cabin in the Woods and whatnot. So I'm looking forward to what this ends up being. Everything I've seen from the trailer, and it's Ryan Gosling. You can't go wrong with Ryan Gosling. I'm kind of hoping, because I'm hoping to go to South by Southwest this year, and I'm hoping they premiere it there because it's timed pretty well, and Ryan Gosling's been there before, fingers crossed. But this looks fantastic. It really does. And I didn't like The Martian as much as you guys. I thought it was just okay. I still can't get over the fact that everything he needed was on Mars that he could survive. I thought that was ridiculous. But whatever. A lot of people love that movie. So hopefully they get
to see it. Golden Globe Award best comedy, The Martian.
Yeah, it was so funny. It was hysterical. I just couldn't stop.
It was hysterical laughing. That he had everything that he needed on the planet.
This one looks funnier, actually. It looks more hysterical. Ryan Gosling, he's very underrated, but he's also a very good actor. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do here.
Yeah, my only concern is that it's coming out in March and not summer. But the only thing I could think, like you're saying, is that maybe they're going to premiere it at South by Southwest, and that's why the March timeframe lines up.
There's usually a couple. You can do one big movie in March, like Godzilla vs. Kong came out in March. I mean, they've got the right time slot if they promote it right. And this has a big following. I mean, that trailer blew up when it released. So
blew up.
All right, Kyle, what else you got?
So my last one was Paramount Plus released the first trailer for Star Trek Starfleet Academy that's coming in 2026. Mm-hmm. So this new show focuses on a group of five young student cadets looking to earn their place as Starfleet officers. Hopefully it doesn't get all Grey's Anatomy with the cadets constantly hooking up in the transporter room.
Wouldn't that be funny?
But it's set in 32nd century San Francisco, and I've enjoyed all of the various Star Trek shows that Paramount has done, and it seems like as soon as one ends, a new one pops up, so this is taking the place of some others that are announced as canceled. It stars Holly Hunter as the captain and school chancellor. Paul Giamatti plays a villain in it. And
a Klingon, like a hybrid or something like that.
He's like a hybrid of part Klingon, part Tellarite. And then Tatiana Maslany is also in it, but I'm not sure what her role is.
And correct me if I'm wrong. It's like 32nd century. It's like 120 years after the first class of cadets or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, I think they said they hadn't been at that San Francisco school location like over 100 years, like 130 years, 100
Yeah, because years, the Discovery jumps forward in time, like past everything that we know in the Star Trek universe. So I think this is like them coming back to Earth or something, like from that particular point in the Star Trek lore.
That's interesting.
Yeah. There's also some like familiar faces, like Tig Notaro's character from Star Trek Discovery, who that character, whenever she was on screen, I always enjoyed so Jet. Whenever she always had me laughing. I loved that character. So I don't know how she's back, like if they jumped through time. So I'll see how that works. It also looked like Robert Picardo was in the trailer too. Star Trek Voyager. So I'm not sure how he works to be there.
He's a hologram, so he'd be
okay
living forever.
Interesting.
So,
but no Tilly, because Tilly was supposed to be leaving Discovery to go to the Academy to work at the Academy, but there wasn't a note of Tilly being there.
Yeah, I didn't notice her listed. Maybe she could be listed, but I remember that in Discovery she was gonna go to work there. But
that was my original fear, was like her character's nice and all in the show, like don't get me wrong, but like her carrying a show especially carrying one that's not on a ship, because, you know, people have their thoughts on DS9. I think DS9 is probably some of the best Trek out there, because of, it was close to Gene Roddenberry's vision of trying to, like, you know, promote world peace and that kind of thing. So, like, to hear the, you know, with Paul Giamatti being the villain and then Tatiana Maslany being here, it's like, and then the time frame when it's going to actually happen, like, I'm actually more excited now than I was before. I'm just interesting to see, like, why they're going to boot this up in 26 when they did announce that Strange New Worlds is going to get its fifth and final year of its 5-year mission with just a shortened 6-episode season. Mm-hmm. So, like, that still has some legs. So it's always interesting when there's two Star Trek shows on at the same time.
They're wrapping a few of them up. Like, that one's wrapping up. Discovery already wrapped up, right?
And yeah, Lower Decks wrapped up.
Yeah. That's, I guess they're just trying to keep the franchise alive. And it's working better on TV.
My fear is that this is going to be the Star Wars Marvel, the wrong thing to do for Star Trek. That's my only fear.
Why do you think that?
Because Strange New Worlds has been so good. Like, I just watched season three just dropped. The cliffhanger from the end of season two into season three, like, that 2-part episode was almost rivaling Best New Worlds for me. Best of Both Worlds from TNG. It was so good. It was like a freaking movie.
That's exciting. All right, well, my last one is Gen V. The season two trailer was there, and it kind of showcased that Starlight is going to pop up, and they had a panel. It's going to be a tense and gory sophomore year for Marie and the fellow soups at Gadalakan, or whatever you say, University. it's set after the fourth season of The Boys, but before the final season, which I'm sure will be out next summer, most likely. And the 3 episodes of that debut on September 17th. What I really like most about this is Gen V was the biggest surprise I've had in a long time, because I had zero interest in it, and I thought that was a great first season. I really thought it was just great TV all the way through, and didn't want a spinoff. I'm kind of tired of everything being spun off into another franchise, even though I'm excited for Neely from Reacher, but I just really wasn't looking forward to it. And I ended up being, like, really surprised how much I enjoyed that one. So I'm looking forward to it. And also, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of tie-ins to The Boys' final season. So you're probably going to want to watch it just to get some hints on where that's going.
And where did the first season take place again? Was it between 3 and 4 of The Boys?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And they're very much in the same world, right? So they're going to, and I'm sure you'll get cameos from other characters. Homelander popped up in the first season, and you're going to get more of that, I'm sure, setting it up for that final season of The Boys. Now, before we, I want to have Kyle kind of give me some quick feedback, but I'm very curious about this. All right, Kyle, because you were there. So this year, like I talked about earlier, had the distinct lack of Marvel and DC for this event. Other than Peacemaker, there really wasn't much about comic book movies, which is just unheard of there at San Diego Comic-Con, or SDCC, as the cool kids call it. Did you feel like it was any different, other than, you know, you talked about the crowds were a little lighter for Hall H, which is where everybody makes the big reveals, but did you feel like it was lighter in the streets, when you're walking around town, when you're in the convention center, all those things?
No, not at all. The really? Convention center was packed. Like, that's why I usually don't spend too much time there. That seemed ridiculously packed on the convention floor. The streets were still plenty busy, with people walking around, things just happening in the street. Like, Star Trek did some, like, dance, like almost like a flash mob style dance performance outside the Paramount Plus Lodge one night.
That's cool. Which is their activation, where they have, like, little themes and whatnot.
So, yeah, people are dressed up in Star Trek costumes and doing, like, all kinds of various dance routines. So there seemed to be lots of things just going on in the street, and activations didn't seem any less. There was stuff for TV shows. There was even something for Predator Badlands. There was Peacemaker had, like, a rock concert. Every hour, you basically went in and watched this rock concert called Peace Fest. Mm-hmm. And they had, like, a recorded thing with John Cena in character, like, talking before each performance and then also telling people to get out when it finished. So yeah, there still seemed to be plenty of stuff going on, even without like a Marvel presence or lots of DC panels or things like that. It only felt different to me because all the usual press people that I go with, none of them were there. But otherwise, the content itself didn't feel lacking to me.
Okay. Now, you do the press room, so I'm curious, any big stories from this year? Or anything where you were, like, taken aback or surprised or was a fun little story?
The Resident Alien press room, I did that turned into I think everyone like was prepared
Earth for Alien Earth.
Alien Earth, I did not do the press room for. They didn't have told me there was no press room.
Okay, go ahead and finish your story then.
But Resident Alien, that turned like that news broke either just before Comic-Con or while we were at Comic-Con that it was going to be their final season. So everything turned more into a celebration of the show rather than a let's find out what's going to happen next season.
So it wasn't solemn. The news wasn't solemn that Resident Alien was ending then?
No, they knew. Apparently, it was a struggle to get this fourth season. Their budget was cut and the number of episodes was cut. So they had an inkling that this was going to be the final season. So they went into it treating it like it was going to be the final season. So everything they planned, like even as they did each set, they're like, this is the last time we're going to shoot in this set. Uh-huh. So they went into it planning that this was going to be the final season. So we're going to get some nice wrap up to these characters. Although they said they would love to come back in like 4 years and do a movie like they've done for other USA shows like Monk and Psych. So they would happily do that if the opportunity popped up. But as of this show, this fourth season, they went into it planning for it to be the final season, even though there's always that remote hope that maybe we'll get a fifth. But they didn't think it was likely.
Was Tudyk there for the panel?
Yeah. Yes, he was there for the panel, and he basically, when it became the Q&A, almost everyone went for him to ask questions.
I'm sure.
This is probably like the longest show he's been on, right?
Well, yes.
Every show he goes on, he's like the kiss of death for the show. So the fact that he's actually been able to like carry the show for four seasons is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and so someone gave him whatever his character from... is it Moana? He plays the chicken. Someone gave him like a stuffed chicken that he was carrying around.
That's cool. At
all the tables and everything during the press room. So he was going into that. There was another panel that he was on, TV Guide magazine, fan favorites. And again, he was getting a bunch of the questions on that. But what I liked about that panel was that it's just a wide variety mix of actors from various shows who have never worked with one another. And they were all fanning out sitting next to Alan Tudyk, especially one who had kids that watch all these Disney movies. And he does so many Disney voices. So they were super excited to sit there with him.
And that is the best part of that whole convention, right? Is that, yeah, the panels are cool and seeing the celebrities and whatnot, but just walking around and seeing fans like just so immersed in everything. That's always fun. It's exhausting. Don't get me wrong. Cause it's everywhere. But it's also very fun, just very crowded.
Yeah, you're always surprised by, like, you see all these people in cosplay, and it's stuff that you've never even heard of, but you can see, like, that these people are diehard fans. Like, one of the things I went to was a Dungeon Crawler Carl Audible. It's a book series that Audible has done these elaborate voice performances for. And so they had an offsite party in a arcade where they had this. I saw all these people dressed up in cosplay for this book series I'd never even heard of before, but there hasn't even been like a movie or anything done for it, but they're all dressed exactly like the characters described in the books, and they're just diehard fans of this series. Apparently there is a series in the works for it, a potential series in live action.
Of course there is. Of course there is. Anything, final words before we move on to Naked Gun on San Diego Comic-Con this year?
No, I didn't have anything. If you have the chance to go, I think it's definitely a fun thing to experience. It's just massive. It's even bigger than you could imagine. There's just a lot of, even if you just happen to be in San Diego around that time, there's
good luck.
Plenty to do with the activations and things outside that you don't even need a ticket for.
I would say most of the time people are not in the convention center. I mean, there's so many things around town.
Yeah, I think the people in the convention center, like on the floor, are people that are buying stuff to try to resell and make money. Yeah. Like, it seems like.
It's still a good event, though. So if you ever want to check out a real genre fan convention, San Diego Comic-Con's the way to go. Now we're going to segue. We're going to talk about Fantastic Four in a minute, but also the Naked Gun hit, and Trey and I were trying to see it. We just didn't get time before the recording of this podcast, but Kyle did. So by God, Kyle, we're going to use you.
Okay.
So the Naked Gun is a reimagining of the Naked Gun franchise, or, you know, or Police Squad, as it was known when it was a TV series. But Leslie Nielsen, obviously, was the famous Frank Drebin. Well, now it's Liam Neeson. He's taking over for Leslie Nielsen. Pamela Anderson is playing Beth Davenport, but Liam Neeson is playing Frank Drebin Jr. He's playing the son of Leslie Nielsen's character. And he's also, I think, teamed up with Paul Walter Hauser, who's playing Ed Hocken Jr. So a lot of juniors going on in this one, including Nordberg. But I think his character is not Nordberg Jr., something like that, played by Moses Jones. And this one revolves around Frank Drebin trying to obviously bring down something. I don't want to spoil too much, but it's going back to parody. We haven't had a lot of success with parodies in recent years because they've been kind of not great. Well, this one is directed by Akiva Schaffer, who is part of the Lonely Island, if you didn't know that. He's friends with Andy Samberg and Jorma Taccone. And he's the one who's directed this and is produced by Seth MacFarlane. So you've got a lot of a good comedy pedigree here. So I'm curious. Reviews have been very good for this, which is surprising. It's now in theaters. Go see it if Kyle gives you the stamp of approval. So, Kyle, I'm asking you, does this revive the parody? Is this good?
Yeah, I'd say it's very, very, very good.
Really?
I
assumed I was going to be disappointed. I really did.
No. I was worried when this was first announced. Like, could the Zucker Brothers style humor work in today's world where people can get offended just by a joke, a pun about a gene? And
you leave Sydney Sweeney alone, goddammit. Leave her. She's an angel.
Work and can Liam Neeson be funny, and will it even live up to the original? And for all three, the answer was yes. I really enjoyed this. They were able to recapture that same look and feel of the original with all that quick wordplay, the sight gags, and all that deadpan humor. And there's like so many callbacks to the original, whether it's like driving with a car POV or the Drebin's martial arts skills or his obsession with coffee and things like that. They really like remind you of what made those first films so enjoyable. And they do address the OJ, big elephant OJ in the room early on and in a really fun way. And it never, like, one thing I was worried about was, like, is this going to feel like it's too PC, or that, are they trying to eliminate things that are maybe too offensive? But it never really felt that way. It just felt funny. I thought Liam Neeson was hilarious in this role. Like, it really feels like he could be Leslie Nielsen's son. Like, really? The way he plays the character, like, he's just great at delivering like those lines with so matter-of-factly, and
he's great at, like, deadpan. He really, really is.
Yeah. And the physical humor as well, like, just, he's really good. And Pamela Anderson, like, she's also surprising. She's making this great comeback. First she was proven that she could do dramatic roles with her, like, really raw performance in The Last Showgirl. Mm-hmm. And now she's like, she's just hilarious in this, it's amazing what she's willing to do, like, the most ridiculous things in this movie. And she's just really funny as well. And like you said, like, the supporting cast, you had Paul Walter Hauser in there as his partner. You have CCH Pounder as the captain. I think that's how you pronounce her name. It's,
yep.
Shh. Okay. And you have Danny Houston as, like, the bad guy that they're going up against.
That's all he does. I don't think he can do anything else at this point.
But yeah, I overall, I really enjoyed it. The audience was laughing hysterically the whole time.
Was it crowded?
Yeah, this one's a weird one where like every other seat was taken. I don't know if it's all single people, but I appreciate that. Like that everyone left room for everyone else, left that buffer seat. But yeah, otherwise it was pretty much full every other seat.
Oh, wow.
With a couple pairs. Yeah.
Now, is this by the time the movie ended? Now, what I like about this is it's a clean 90 minutes, right? So it's not, it did something very similar to Fantastic Four, which Fantastic Four also like kept the runtime down. And I was very thankful for it because it felt like it kept going. But is it because when you're talking about a parody, right, it can get old really, really fast. But if they keep the runtime short and just get to the jokes, I think it can be great.
Yeah, and the jokes are rapid fire.
Okay,
on this. Cool. Like, and there's always something, like even what's happening in the front, there's stuff happening in the background all the time. And so there's just constantly stuff going on. And even throughout the credits and stuff, there's extra stuff going on that like either it's wacky credits or there's some music stuff that's playing during the credits. So it's a full, from start to finish, there's stuff going on.
That's awesome. So if $10 is full price for Mission, what do you give the Naked Gun?
I would say 7.5.
Okay. All right. And you would see, like, you're hoping it becomes a franchise? Like, you're hoping it does that?
Oh,
well?
Yeah. I would definitely watch another one of these.
That's awesome. That's what I was hoping for. Sweet. Naked Gun's in theater, so go check it out. Now we're going to talk about the Fantastic Four. Now, we're not going to do, like, so much of a full review, but, you know, you can find a full review on our website, by the way. Brian Williams did that for us because we weren't here last week. But if you didn't know, this is like the third reinvention of, or fourth, technically. There was the lost one in the 90s, right? But this is the new reinvention of the Fantastic Four. It's the first time it's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They're in a completely different Earth, Earth 858, I believe. And if you know comic lore, that means a multiverse. And they basically have to go up against Galactus. That's the, and the Silver Surfer. And this is where Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby, Ebon Moss-Barak, and Joseph Quinn are cast as our Fantastic Four, Reed Richards, Sue Storm, Ben Grimm, and Johnny Storm. And Galactus is played by Ralph Ineson. And you got Julia Garner, I always say her name wrong, as Shelley Bell, who is the Silver Surfer that we're coming into contact with. Now, this movie is really, it does very similar to what Superman did, which is you hit the ground running. You're into it as soon as things get going. They take about a minute or two to really describe the origin story, and then they're past it, which I appreciate. I think all superhero movies should do this going forward. I don't need another origin story of anything, really. Just tell me what happened. Let's get moving. And this is very similar in that respect. But I do want to, I want to get to the question, which does it save the MCU in a sense, but how did you feel about the movie overall, Troy? You haven't talked in a few minutes, so I know you're probably just chomping at the bit. Fantastic Four, first steps. Did it take for the first steps to kind of restore your faith in Marvel?
100%. Yeah, it was so good. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was like a really great action Marvel movie. It wasn't super Rock'em Sock'em Robots. It wasn't super CGI special effects. The things that are CGI feel like they are present and supported. Like obviously Galactus is a giant.
Mm-hmm.
So walking through the streets of whatever it was, New York-ish type of town, Times Square. So it was New York, but on a different Earth. Everything in there, just, it felt real, grounded, like what I would expect for new parents raising a child. The entire sequence where they're baby proof in the apartment is super funny and like realistic. And I think what it does is it really puts forth that whole concept of you don't have to just be a superhero movie. You can just have a really good story and just let the story play out with the superheroes that are there. Not quite sure what the powers of the baby are and what they're going to become. So that's got some intrigue. And obviously there's the mid-credit singer that happens. So it gets us intrigued and ready to go for Doomsday down the line. Really, really happy with this outing because I haven't seen a single good Fantastic Four movie ever.
I disagree with that. Okay, the first, people like shit on the Jessica Alba ones. I like those movies. I thought Chris Evans was great in those movies. I enjoyed those too. So
they're cheesy, corny. I mean, they are what they are. For me, it was too cheesy, corny. Like this felt more grounded. This felt more X-Men. This felt more in that universe than those. Those were just trying to play for more cheap entertainment. This felt more grounded. And I think the grounded is what we needed for the MCU to take another step in the right direction.
You feel the same way, Kyle?
I probably preferred the Chris Evans ones over this one. I mean, overall, I enjoyed this one, but I didn't really feel there was that much of a story. I actually enjoyed Thunderbolts a lot more than this. Like, I didn't.
I agree with you on that very much. It just didn't catch on popularity wise as much.
Like, to me, like, I thought it was fine. It was entertaining, but it just, there didn't seem to be that much of a story to it.
It feels very much, and I'm not going to spoil the movie, but it feels very much like setting up, and I'm going to tread lightly because I don't want to have to do a whole spoiler warning and stuff, but it feels like you're setting up a future show off. Yes. Like, this movie is very much setting up a future for members of the Fantastic Four, if I'm, you know, I'll tread lightly there, members of Fantastic Four, as well as for who the Avengers will be fighting at a later date. That's what I think is going on here. Does that seem right to you guys?
I mean, it seems that's why first steps. Yeah.
It's in the title. I don't know why I'm treading lightly for that. But I'm with you, Kyle. I didn't enjoy it as much as Thunderbolts. I thought Thunderbolts is the best Marvel so far this year. But I will say this. I thought the characters were well played. Pedro Pascal, surprisingly, even though he's in everything, is always good in whatever he does. I just am sick of seeing him at this point. But Vanessa Kirby, who I've always liked as an actress, she's the center of the movie for me. Like, she makes the whole movie work. She is the focal point. And this is the heart of the movie, and I would definitely watch her in anything else. But I also like Julia Garner a lot, so I like her character too, quite a bit.
I thought she portrayed the Silver Surfer really well too.
She did. She made the Silver Surfer interesting. I didn't love the Silver Surfer in the original movie, but also, you know, special effects have come a long way since then. But if you can make the T-1000 look awesome, that should have looked awesome in that movie too. But it's the same
kind of character too. So the fact that it's taken, you know, this long, right? Obviously, because property was with Fox, but like Silver Surfer is like, it's an iconic role. So to see this come to life finally, it was like, yeah, this is good.
Well, it's a different version of the Silver Surfer. So people know, like, that's a character in the comic book. So relax. It's not just recast. I was a big fan of the casting. I think the casting absolutely works. I do think the movie worked at a good clip. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Thunderbolts more, but also Thunderbolts is kind of more grounded. And I like grounded, so I was pretty happy with that. But the score was fantastic. I guess that doesn't get talked about enough. I was really impressed and pleasantly surprised by the score. It's probably one of the best comic book movie scores I've heard in a while. Now, Troy, you're a big music guy. Do you agree with that? Or
yeah, I totally agree with that. I think the music really set the tone of the movie. It felt like it was, you know, present in this pseudo 1950s yet technological 60s, era,
more 60s I would say, but
yeah, I mean it really fit the time, and I think it brings you in and gives you the emotional hits where you needed the emotional hits.
Now is the clobbering guy, is he typically like the chef, or do they sort of tailor that guy because he's in the bear?
that's funny. I don't know the answer to that. I am not a huge fan of those comics. I didn't really enjoy them, if I'm being perfectly honest. So I don't know. I think I remember Thing cooking. I don't remember him clobbering a pan, you know what I mean? But I did like the banter back and forth about trying to get him to do his catchphrase, even though he's like, it's even in the cartoon. It was always in the comics. And they also, I don't think Johnny ever actually says flame on. I think it's just a little action figure does it. And I thought that was pretty funny. He just like turns into flame. So they do some plays on things that I think are clever that work. But maybe that is a tie into the bear. That would be pretty funny if that's the only reason it's there. It's just, he's a great chef because he's had preparation from another role. So quick scores. I give this one a $7. So $10 full price admission. What do you give Fantastic Four before I ask this final question?
Each of you. I said $7 as well.
Okay. Kyle?
Yeah, I guess around 7. Yeah. I did enjoy Naked Gun more. Yeah.
That's, man, now I wish we would have saw Naked Gun. Damn it.
I only had four people in my Fantastic Four showing, so it was like the perfect fantastic number to have.
I went and that's funny. I went and saw it just before this podcast because I, like I said, I just got back from vacation and my wife and I wanted to see that movie. I wanted to see Naked Gun. She wanted Fantastic Four. So guess which one? And we go to see it. We're the only ones in the theater. That's it. So it was Fantastic Two. There's nobody else in there. I will. One thing that should be mentioned, the 3D was very well done. I like the 3D quite a bit. Kyle, you're a big 3D guy. Did you?
Yeah, I saw it in 3D as well. Although two of those people at my showing left after the during the first credits, and the last person left before the post credits. It's like, have you never seen a Marvel movie? Yeah,
they deserve. They deserve everything that happens to them in life.
But yeah, I thought this one did have really good 3D. Like especially like out in space and that kind of stuff. They did really well with that.
And I think Galactus was a very strong villain. I actually, you know. I can feel this, you know, Ralph Ineson plays Galactus, and I can feel this kind of being another Kang situation where he's going to pop up in multiple movies and whatnot. I'm more interested in Galactus than I am, like, Kang. Kang, it just didn't work for me. It had nothing to do with the actor. I never liked the character.
It never worked.
Yeah, I don't think it ever worked. Galactus works for me.
You needed someone that was formidable, and it didn't seem formidable. He seemed angry.
Yeah, and boring, yeah. Honestly. It just... boring. All right, so the final question is, does the Fantastic Four save the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Now, granted, they're still making money, right? But their budgets are so high, they're not making the money they used to. They're not having billion-dollar movies worldwide anymore. They haven't had one since, well, Deadpool versus Wolverine, or Deadpool and Wolverine, taking that one out, it's been a while since they had a billion-dollar Marvel movie. Does this one kind of restore the cinematic universe, or at least puts it back on even footing for you? Troy said yes already, so Kyle.
For me, I thought Thunderbolts already did that for me, because I thought that was great. That was back to being quality entertaining. So I didn't necessarily need Fantastic Four to do that.
Okay, well, from that perspective, does it keep it rolling for you? Like, these characters, yeah, they're going to be part of Avengers, that keeps you invested, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I thought it was still solid and entertaining, and the way they set things up at the end, it's definitely leaning towards what's coming next. So I thought that did a good job doing that.
Troy, you feel pretty good about where the Marvel Cinematic Universe is right now?
Yeah, I'm actually really excited. This feels like when we were waiting for the Avengers first movie. Like, I'm waiting for the Thunderbolts and the Four to get together. I think that's going to be super, super fun.
Well, I am very... with Thunderbolts and this one, like I said before, Captain America Brave New World was just okay to me. I thought it was just fine. Like, it did nothing for me. I don't find Sam to be the leader. And I know that's not cool because he's got the shield and everything, but he doesn't carry me for a whole movie. I like Anthony Mackie. I like him better as a supporting actor. Pedro Pascal, I think, could do it. But Vanessa Kirby's really... her and Florence Pugh should be the leaders going forward. Like... figure out a hierarchy. I don't care how it works, but those two really have done wonders, and I love the characters that we have now with Fantastic Four. I love Thing and Johnny. Like, they're back and forth, playful uncles. There's a scene in the movie with a car seat. I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen the movie yet, but that was my favorite scene in the whole damn movie. Is just trying to figure out how to strap in a car seat. And I don't know why, but and Vanessa Kirby, the way that she looks on adoringly, while the guys are just idiots. Like, I love that kind of playful banter. We need more of that in Marvel if you're going to keep it going. And now you have more characters that I can get engaged with, because I think they lost a lot of people for a while. I think once these start hitting home video and Disney Plus and whatnot, you're really going to start seeing Marvel heat up again. I really feel that way.
And even the mid-credit stinger is actually really funny, too.
It's funny and also really paints a path forward. So,
yeah,
it's important.
The final, the end of the credit stinger, like, you don't need to stay for that one.
It's kind of a throwaway. Yeah. Kind of a throwaway. But still, it's just a fun little aside. Okay. Well, I think that's it. Kyle, tell people where they can find you on your website.
You can find me at noreruns.net. And I also posted lots of stuff on Instagram at @TwoKyool, TwoKyool. You can see lots of pictures from my my Comic-Con trip there.
Well, that's too cool, man. That's too cool. Do you regret that handle?
Yes. Yes.
It's too late now, though, right?
It's too late to change it.
Yeah, you're committed.
I do have like a no reruns Instagram, but that hasn't been used and there's no way to merge it. So I'm stuck with it.
And you do have some of the press stuff from your time there on No Reruns.
Yeah, I will be. Yeah, I haven't posted any of the interview videos yet. That stuff will be coming. I just finally finished posting my daily recaps. And so next will be the videos.
So keep an eye on his website for that. And you can always find us at thehollywoodoutsider.com. And, you know, we have our two episodes that recently just came out where we had the best of movies and TV of the first quarter century of this quarter century. And we're going to have more of that stuff as the year goes out. Like, we haven't decided exactly what we're going to touch, but probably like best villains, best heroes, that kind of thing, stuff like that. But we're going to come back to that as a theme throughout the rest of the year. But thanks, everybody, for listening. That's the end of this show. I hope you enjoyed it. Go check out Comic-Con. Go check out Naked Gun. Go check out Fantastic Four. Go check out Superman again. Just go to the damn theater. There's lots of stuff to see, man. And there's a lot of stuff coming out I really want to see. Weapons looks fantastic. There's a lot coming out. And Freakier Friday, maybe, will be good. Who knows? But the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, if you don't want to leave, buy popcorn. Or do what Kyle does and go see three movies in one damn day because he doesn't want to have to go back to a theater.
But I still have to sit through 30 minutes of trailers for each one.
That's an hour and a half of trailers. Unless you
time it right so that they overlap by about 20 minutes.
That's way too many trailers, man. Do that better. All right, guys, take care, and we'll talk to you next week.